It's Wednesday, April 18th, 2007, and you're listening to episode 48 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 55 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan, and with me on the mics is Chad.
Howdy.
John.
Hey.
Mike.
Hello.
And Adam.
I noticed I lost my spot as first introduced.
You did. Well, gamers are some of the most superstitious people in the world, perhaps next to baseball players, myself, and this would include me. And we're now...
You're a baseball player?
No. But we are now on I'm a superstitious gamer. We have gotten about 20 seconds to 2 minutes in now, three separate times, and had something instantly ruin the episode. The first time it was a dog, the second time it was feedback on the system.
Third time it was my physical excitement.
Yeah, third time was your physical excitement.
It knocked over a table. Apparently. Now I'm excited.
Maybe we need to re-record.
We'll leave that in for everyone to enjoy.
Excellent.
But I think that's a sign this is going to be a good episode, because in the past, for some reason, the episodes where we have had trouble recording because of ourselves have always sucked. But the episodes where the very forces of nature have been against our recording have always turned out pretty good.
I like a good conspiracy.
It's because we've tamed the elements.
So hopefully this will live up to that. There's a little change in our setting outside of Mike's excitement flipping a table, which you guys at home may not immediately notice, but this will have some impact on the show, so I'm going to go ahead and tell you about it. We decided to move our recording from Saturday over to Monday.
You mean we can go out on Saturdays and be social now? No!
Fear the Boot is finally free to go back into the wind and spread our wings and enjoy ourselves. Which is one of the reasons we did it, was we wanted to have Friday or Saturday back because there's just so much else going on.
Good, because I hate spending Saturdays with you guys, despite the fact that I went out to dinner with you on Saturday.
Saturday anyway, to talk about going on a vacation where you and Tim are all going to hang out together anyway. Yes. The impact that this is going to have on the show should outwardly be minimal at first, because we're still going to release them on Wednesdays, but we don't want to be rushed trying to get them out from Monday to a Wednesday. So what we are going to do is, at some point in the future, we are going to do both a Saturday and a Monday recording to get at least one episode in backlog. And the result of this is going to be that at some point in the future, the news we give on the show regarding the community or whatever, instead of being 4 days outdated, may suddenly become about 9 days outdated.
And since we keep on the bleeding edge of game industry development,
right, oh, yeah. Exactly.
You're gonna notice.
So all of our announcements about things like FASA and TSR may be a little bit yes. behind the schedule.
Our commentary is going to move from 1992 to 1993.
Whoa. I've almost graduated high school.
But the great thing about podcasts...
I'm seven.
I'm almost 10.
The great thing about podcasting is that if we do have a timely announcement, we can always go back and edit that in. So hopefully this will produce no really big outward change in the show for you guys.
But my voice is going to be a week stale.
Got to keep that podcast fresh.
We have a couple announcements today. The first of which involves the very first charitable effort that Fear the Boot has gotten behind, actually since last episode or two when we did the thing for Big Brothers and Big Sisters. So I guess this really isn't...
Wow, that's epic.
That is epic. That's not as original as I thought it was going to be when I first started saying it. And since this is live podcasting, we'll just go ahead and leave that in. The charitable thing we're getting behind is, some of you guys have probably already heard about this, but the soldiers that are down in Iraq obviously have limited access to their role-playing supplies, and therefore they have, in Baghdad, a little camp area where they can go in and have all of these very social activities like soccer games or softball games or whatever. And
but, you know, dorks don't play sports.
That's right.
Whether they're in the military or not.
Just we can do a remix of Bombs Over Baghdad. RPGs over Baghdad.
You know, which is...
No, an RPG is something else in Baghdad.
It's very true.
They are in Baghdad. I'm sitting here looking at a picture of the soldiers that are sponsoring this, and several of them are as pale as I am. And for that, we salute you.
Wait, is that a gamer chick in that picture?
Yeah, there's a gamer chick in that picture.
I can't see her.
But this convention, what they are going to do at this little social area is hold a gaming convention on June 9th. Looks like from noon to 9 o'clock p.m., of course, their local time, where they are going to have a bunch of organized play events And they're also going to hand out some freebies to any of the soldiers or civilian contractors that are able to make it by. And obviously, this is a predominantly American thing because it's a predominantly American military operation.
That is so cool. Mercs playing role-playing games. Do they play mercs in role-playing games, or do they play, like, accountants or something?
You know what else would be cool? You need to Skype in for a game. You could play a game over Twitter.
Negative.
But the... Since this is open to any of the allied countries, there are other countries where their soldiers or their contractors would be eligible to be involved in this, like England is one example. So here's what we are doing. They have sent out sort of a plea saying that one of the problems they have down there is that they have very limited access to gaming supplies. And, of course, these guys are separated from pretty much everything that makes it home to them. Therefore, what we are going to do is we are going to demonstrate to the world at large that we as gamers can take care of our own by not letting them free of this addiction. And so we are going to put together some care kits.
Basically a big crack bag of role-playing games.
Yeah, that's exactly it. We're putting together, and kind of what I'm thinking is we'll do these little kits where we will get some kind of like a duffel bag or something, and in each one, we are going to put everything you need to play a role-playing game. We're going to put in dice, pencils, blank character sheets, a little bit of blank paper, and then the basic core source books of a role-playing game, which could be like the Shadowrun main book, could be like the D&D Player's Handbook, DMG, and a Monstrous Manual.
Will it be all FAST and TSR games, though?
No. Well, yeah.
How we are
there, what other games are there?
How we're picking the games that we're going to send is I looked at a list of the games that they have people down there demoing during this convention. If somebody's demoing it, I'm assuming somebody's interested in it. So we are going to use that as our starting point, and we will send games in this kit that they're enjoying that we would not necessarily consider FTB 9,000, 8,000, 7,000, or 6,000. Well, someone's already demoing Rifts, so we are already in quite a conundrum. But nonetheless, this is for them, not us. So if you are interested in getting involved in this, and you're interested in sending something down to these gamers...
I'm interested. Tell me what I need to do.
All you got to do is stop by our website, feartheboot.com, and we're going to have on there a link so you can click and make a donation. And it's probably going to be on PayPal, but they have recently updated PayPal such that if you want to make a donation, you don't need a PayPal account. You can make a donation directly off a credit card. If you don't feel comfortable with PayPal at all for whatever reason, and you would rather just send me a check, or maybe you own a gaming shop and you'd rather just send me a bunch of books that you got at reduced cost or whatever, send me a private message on the forum or an email to dan@feartheboot.com. And I will give you a mailing address where you can send these things directly to me through postal mail, if that's what you prefer.
And I think this kind of goes without saying, but don't make the books nappy.
No.
Yeah. Don't send...
That would be headed in the wrong direction.
That copy of Shadowrun... Well, that copy of Shadowrun, but that copy of like any kind of player's handbook that you dropped a pizza on...
Right.
Yeah, we don't really...
We don't want to have to have a big book review hoedown where we go through and just sort out all the good stuff from the crap. So just be clear-headed about the whole thing and send us down stuff that's in good shape, because we are sending this to our troops overseas, want to show our fellow gamers much love. I mean, whether you agree with the whole thing politically or not, this isn't about that. We're just showing love to gamers in need. Second announcement for tonight, we have begun the planning for the second Worldwide Wing Night.
Oh,
Does anyone remember when the first one was?
No.
It was the end of February.
Was it the end of February? I couldn't remember if it was this early this year or late last year.
No, it was early this year because I was here.
It was early this year. It was the end of February. I can give you landmarks. It was the end of January or end of February.
I think it was the end of January.
Yeah, I think so too.
The semester had been underway, but not by much.
Okay, well, at the previous one, we had a few planning issues, particularly with the St. Louis group. So what we are planning is on May 18th, which is a Saturday, right, Adam?
Yes.
Okay.
No.
Wednesday?
Oh, it's a Friday.
It's got to be a Friday.
It's a Friday,
because the 5th is a Saturday.
Well, we just threw a whole bunch of days out, so let's...
Yeah, it's a Friday. It is a Friday, May 18th. We are going to have the second Worldwide Wing Night. Now, for those of you who don't know what a Worldwide Wing Night is, it's really easy.
It's wonderful.
All you do is you get together a bunch of your gaming buddies or non-gaming buddies that should be gaming buddies. You go to your local eatery of whatever kind you prefer. You get a big old platter of wings and a bunch of beer, and you eat and drink and be merry.
Yes.
And that's pretty much it. If you are in St. Louis and you would like to join the Fear the Boot group, or you want to come to St. Louis and join us for this, then we will be having it, I believe, probably at like, what, 7 o'clock?
Yes,
so probably 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock, and is it going to be at the same place again?
Yes, it will be at that one place on South 141.
Okay, and if for those of you who weren't here for the last one, when we say that one place, that's not a euphemism.
Yeah.
The name of the place really is, quote, that one place, end quote.
It's they not, have that one burger, that one shot, that one whatever.
The service sucks, but the place is cool.
Yeah, and this year we are going to call ahead, and we're going to reserve a table about...
Yeah, I'm going to do a little more organization
because
this time.
Last time we had a table for four with like three or four rings of people flooding out around us, and it was a great big tragedy. So this year we're going to call ahead and get a huge block reserved for anyone that's going to join us here at St. Louis. If you're not in St. Louis, that's not a problem. Just drive wherever you like and pick up a big thing of wings.
And take a digital camera with you. Even if it's just you, yourself, alone. Take a picture of yourself eating some wings, send it in to us, and we'll post it on our forums.
Yeah, we have a picture thread on the forums for these things. We also have a Flickr group, which you can find a link to on our forums, of course, at feartheboot.com. So stop by and definitely send us pictures of how it turned out. And you got a little bit to plan. I mean, this is still about a month away by the time we release the show. So you got a little bit of time to plan for this.
And if you come to the St. Louis W3N2, you are going to see a wank smackdown between me and Tony of Fanboy Smackdown Radio going toe-to-toe over whether or not Alan Moore's Watchmen is a good comic book or a bad comic book.
And I'm going to be sipping my scotch right next to Tony, bolstering his heroic, indefeatable effort.
You know, he was hemming and hawing. He was hemming and hawing about how he may or may not show up. But I think now that you've issued the challenge, now he has no choice.
If he does not show up,
it's only because he's a punk bitch. There is no other reason.
You know, if he
loves you, Tony.
If he doesn't show up, I'm going to take a copy of Watchmen and just rip it in half and declare victory.
Like a phone book.
That's right.
Only smaller and
much
not
easier
as big.
To rip in half.
We love you, Tony, and Fanboy Smackdown, and Sci-Fi Smackdown.
He claimed he wasn't going to come because of the drive or something. I don't personally buy it. I think he's taking the easy way out to avoid this debate.
I think so, too. I think he's just afraid of the
seems to me the gauntlet has been laid, and he has only to respond.
Now, while we're on the subject of wings and Watchmen and
all that is good and holy.
All that is good and holy.
Except for Watchmen, which is neither good nor holy.
It's so good that you knee-jerkingly hate it, Chad.
You know, I apparently made some passing diss at it last episode.
It's amazing.
Several
it's
people
it's like you said you flipped through it and it didn't look
it
like
didn't
your
look
thing.
Too good, but I didn't read it and didn't really know. Yeah. And
then they're like, Dan, how could you hate it? How could you hate it? I'm like, no. I hate it. Not Dan. I hate it. Everyone's like, oh, well, who cares? Dan hates it.
I didn't listen to last week's episode, so I can't confirm or deny these rumors.
Weren't you here for last week's episode?
I don't remember last week, dude.
That was such a
listen,
week
I'm
ago.
Adam Pinilla,
Beer
man
has
about
town. Flooded that out your ears.
I'm Adam Pinilla, man about town. I don't have time for these paltry details.
All right, well, while we're on the subject of Tony and wings, Adam, you suggested a banter topic, which I think is pretty good. It's going to be an on-again, off-again banter series. Not one we're going to do every episode, but we can come back to every so often, which is making us pin down our number one favorite or absolute bottom of the stack least favorite something. And no cheesy cop-outs. No,
you know, well, it's a tie between these three things.
We kind of hit on this last week with the Star Wars shit.
Yeah, but we took some easy ways out. Because several of us had top twos or top threes.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is
well,
number
I'd
one
either take
unequivocal.
The A-Wing or the Assault Gunboat.
Yeah, it's crap. Assault Gunboat. Unequivocally. Continue.
I have to, if I had to pick one, it would be the Assault Gunboat.
Anyway, well, that's good. Like, that was last week. Yeah. All right. Well, it's not really
John, much. Between you and I, we are now formal wing.
Very nice.
All right, let's...
Yeah, I'll call you for reinforcements.
All right. I said that was last week.
You need to pick a Greek letter.
Are we
going to
be mu or nu?
Or iota. Or, yeah, we got to
pick
a.
You're going to be tau. Now be quiet.
Tau was a gunboat designation. That's
I know it was. Now be quiet.
Adam's going to this week. Adam goes first. Your favorite.
Oh, I got to go first?
You got to go first.
Yeah, because you got to give us time to think of something.
I was just going
to
copy off somebody else.
Okay.
All right. If I was going to have to pin down my all time favorite RPG.
Right. Favorite RPG for this week.
No, not for this week.
I need a clarification.
Sure, go ahead.
The topic for this week is favorite RPG. I mean.
Does this have to be something that's published or something that we... Could it be something we made up?
I'd say it could be anything.
Yeah, it's going to have to be something that's anything.
So anything. Okay.
I am going to go with the release of All Flesh Must Be Eaten.
Really?
Really? Yes. The zombie game?
I would not have expected this. Defend your choice.
I enjoy action-packed RPGs. And I think that survival horror is probably the best avenue to have a survival RPG.
The Lord is my point, man. I shall not want.
And it has clever things like you can play the priest class that has the saying, "The Lord is my point, man. I shall not want." And I enjoy the system. Yeah. And varying degrees of success.
I have never even so much as seen an All Flesh Must Be Eaten book. So
He'll lend it to you as soon as you give him Dark Knight Returns.
It's in my bag right now.
It's in my man,
you actually got it.
Yeah. It's in my European man bag. Which means
I got so many of those in Europe. When you took a bus ride, they just give you a merce. I was like, oh, okay, what do I do with this? I threw it out when I got to the town.
Have you seen my merce?
Yeah, your merce is actually fairly voluminous.
Well, all right there, Mr. Fancy Pants. You asked me, so Dan, bust it out.
My number one pick for an RPG, if it's anything at all, would be one that I wrote that we have never... I've discussed in passing on the show, but it's a science fiction... I call it a space opera. I've had people debate with me about the exact meaning of space opera, but it's about large
conflict. It's a romantic comedy.
Yes, it's a romantic comedy. Pretty much Julia Roberts and...
It's the only character class.
Right. And if you're a guy, you play...
Julia Roberts.
If you're the DM, you're not the DM. You're the Richard
Gere.
No,
who's the guy from Ocean's 11 and...
Brad Pitt?
George Clooney.
George Clooney, yes. Yes, George Clooney. If you're a guy, you have to play George Clooney. Okay.
Frank Sinatra?
I couldn't think of his name.
Johnny Fontaine?
So what's the actual name of this RPG?
The real Ocean's 11.
The game, what it's about is far future, 2,000 years in the future, capital ships, alien races, huge epic battles.
Slow capital ships that turn like British Navy does.
That's right. Fight along the broadsides. And the reason I like it, it's not some ego thing because, I wrote it and it's perfect because I wrote it. Because I've written some games that definitely some have been better than others. And I've written some systems and game settings that...
Well, as many times as you've rewritten this game, we know you don't think that it's perfect.
Right. So I've written some real lemons out there. But having run this
lemon,
game...
Lemon, the role-playing game, was one.
Actually, do you guys remember
the citrus?
Lemon, the citrus tea.
It's in my eye!
No, did any of you guys ever play the old... like Apple and x86 game Lemonade Stand?
No.
It was a simulation where you ran.
Do I need to move on to the next guy?
Are you going to tell me you made a pen and paper RPG based on it?
No, but somebody could.
No. I'm just all right, anyway.
I'm saying riveting. The platform exists to do it. So anyways, that's my number one choice, and the reason
it
is...
What's the name of this game?
The name of the game is Apocryphos.
It's not a Danvers.
Danvers, whatever everybody calls it. But the reason that I like it so much is because we have run over the years several many campaigns of it, and almost without fail, they have all been absolutely excellent campaigns.
It's a good game. It's a good system.
So
I'll give you that.
Yeah, Mike has played in many of these campaigns, so he can vouch for this. And that's the reason I like it, is because of the success it's had at the table. Chad.
I would have to say it's a game that we made. I guess it's one of your games, Dan, but a lot of us had a hand in making it, and that would be Skies of Glass. And I don't just mean, we did the series on it, we're making it, and that sort of thing. I mean, I think even when we picked Skies of Glass and when the series first started, I even said this was my favorite game of all time.
I remember that.
I have ran successful and very fun games with it.
That Montana game was great.
I have, thank you. I have played very, very successful games with it, and this game also contains my absolute most favorite character I have ever made, who is the old man named History. I just really, really like it. I can't go on. I mean, I could just go on and on about all the cool things in this game that we've done. I mean, it could have... I'm just speechless.
Don't
I like the game so
much.
Yeah, it's like when you with BattleTech.
Next topic down, you'll have additional opportunity to gush.
Yes.
Excellent.
No foreshadowing. No foreshadowing.
So, Chad for Skies of Glass.
John.
Time for John to rebel by conforming and go with D&D 3rd Edition.
Ooh.
Not 3.5.
Not 3.5. 3.5 improved
position.
Bards and Rangers. I have no use for either.
As a good man should.
No. It's pretty much everything I need with nothing I don't. I can move it around as I want to. The argument that the D20 serves as a universal language has been pooped on these microphones, by myself included, but it's useful.
Well, right, and we've never said D20 is a bad system, just we don't like its ubiquitousness. But for D&D, it really works.
Yes. Well, D&D itself is the generic.
Yeah. So, I mean, D&D works great.
Generic, heroic fantasy. You can do anything with it. Very open. Yeah, everybody knows it.
I have never... There are games I've picked up where I've said, this is a great game, but I got to change the system. I have never picked up D&D and felt the need to radically revise its system.
No,
I mean,
certainly not.
Maybe, I have. But that's everything.
That's because you like to rewrite every system you pick up.
Pretty much.
And by rewrite, we mean de-write.
Discard, yes. Yeah,
pretty much.
I like this one guy, so we're going to discard everything else but this one character I saw in the back of the book.
It's going to be like the last few minutes of Neverending Story. This one guy is floating alone in a blackness, and from there, we shall make wishes upon sand until all of the universe exists again.
Wow, Dan. That was a very deep, informed, and relevant Neverending Story reference. I just want you to think about that.
So, is your summary of D&D 3.0 finished?
Yes, Mike, batter up.
I would have to say probably World of Darkness. I like the... John and I are the preps of gamers.
Because you're an emo vampire and your father doesn't understand you? Is that right. Why you like it?
Because you love cut LARPing. Yourself?
I love LARPing. I have a furry suit. Yes, absolutely. No, I like the supernatural elements of it. I like the occult lore parts of it. I like the mystery and intrigue that come naturally off of the game system. I like the character creation system, and the games that I've played in it have been a lot of fun.
Now, if I was to limit you down, theoretically, because you can debate whether World of Darkness is one game or many games.
Yeah, we always play Werepire of the Oblivious Ascension.
If we took the view that World of Darkness was many games, which one of those games would you pick out of World of Darkness?
Yeah, we'll see. I'm going to get a lot of flack for this, but it'd be Vampire.
I'll give you a lot of flack.
Vampire's the original.
Yeah, it's a core game. Yeah, it's popular.
Actually, I'm going to take this in a completely different direction. What are the odds that all five of us are going to pick different games and...
What, out of World of Darkness?
No. Oh. Out of all of role-playing games, and none of them were Battletech.
None of us picked Battletech, yeah.
Wow.
I would definitely put Battletech in my top three, but it is not my number one.
Yeah, I gotta say that
would too.
I mean, as much as I love Battletech, I have issues with it. One of my issues is that the story that they give and portray is on such a high, grand political level. It's like playing United States, the role-playing game, and the only background we give is on the Senate, the House, and the executive branch of the government.
Yeah,
I think with me, it comes down to a role-playing game has to satisfy two criteria for me. One, have I had fun playing the game?
Right.
And you know what? Battletech satisfies every single time.
Well, I think another reason we come back
what's
to Battletech...
What's your other criteria? I'm curious.
I have to like the system just in general. Like, if I were to pick up the books and read them, I would have to be interested in them.
Typically, when I run a role-playing game with one of my circle of friends, and Mike has seen this many times, and we're deciding what to play, I will have everyone give me a numbered list of like their top three or top five choices for what we're going to play next. And I think one of the reasons we keep coming back to Battletech is you notice sitting here doing our number one games... There is not a single person here that chose the same number one game, but we all agreed that Battletech would be in the top three.
That's very true. Everyone's second best friend.
And so,
the cute sister.
No, we didn't.
Oh.
Yes.
Battletech would probably not be in my top three.
Really?
It'd probably
really?
Be four or five, but it would not be in my top
okay.
three.
Okay. Well, if we just talk around Mike, we just kind of...
talk around the mics.
Right. If we just drop the data that doesn't agree with the conclusion we wanted in the first place... Then pretty
hey,
much.
Hey, you went to college.
Wow, you took statistics.
I've worked for Pfizer.
And you're a doctor. You have a doctorate.
No kidding.
So you could say that. I think that's one of the reasons Battletech always comes up is because even if we don't put it the one,
yeah, most people put it at number two or three.
Yeah, if we were to do a 1 through 3 or 1 through 5 list and then score it across, Battletech would probably win point wise, even if it never took anyone's number one spot.
That's fascinating. I think we should do like some sort
that's
of
that's fascinating.
It is. Oh, I think we should do terrible. Some sort of survey like that amongst the hosts. I think we'd be very surprised by the results.
What are top fives?
Not so much top fives, but just gaming totals. Preferences in general. If we weren't going to do it on the actual mics where we were talking about it, my decision would influence your decision.
Hmm.
And as much as we'd like to say that we're all independent, the first person who goes is going to influence everybody else who talks after him.
Not necessarily successfully, but yes.
Well, I'm not going to say that. Well, okay. What I say is going to be the standard for the podcast, but
right, because if Adam, Mike, and
well, Adam might say something that I'm just not thinking of, and it'll be like, "Oh, hey,
yeah."
No, I will not say I hate something just because people like it. Contrary to popular belief,
okay. Contrary to accepted fact, okay.
Only if the rest of us agree that we like something would you say that you don't like.
All right, guys, I'm really itching to get to the next topic. So can we wrap this up, please?
Well, actually, I'm looking at the time. I think we have a banter topic that we can just package up neatly and put a bow on.
Are you kidding?
Well, actually, you know, maybe we shouldn't, because we've been kind of putting out shorter episodes. Like I've said before, that our episodes, the time I look for is they must be at least 50 minutes and no longer than an hour 10. So 10 minutes either way of an hour.
Right.
Lately, our episodes have all been on that shorter end. So let's give a really value-packed episode here and let's fit in another banter topic.
All right.
Okay. And
oh, God, here we go.
Adam suggested this. And
everyone looked at me like I was an idiot, and then there was a couple moments.
No.
And then it was the calm.
When he said this,
it was a calm of defeat.
There was a moment of complete horror, at which point I transcended.
I don't think this topic can live up to the pump up that
Oh, yes, it can.
I don't even remember what this topic was.
The topic is Batman.
Oh, well, Batman, that's a whole episode. I mean, come on, it's Batman.
That's like
for
a
God's
series
sake.
Unto itself.
Hey, you know what? Batman's a ninja. That's all I got to say.
I cannot disagree with your logic,
Batman
sir.
Batman was trained by Liam Neeson.
I cannot disagree with your logic, sir.
A year before the last movie, what is it, Dark Knight? What was the movie called?
Begins.
Batman Begins. 2005. If you would have told me, like, before I saw Batman Begins, like, hey, dude, guess what? Batman trained as a ninja in a Tibetan monastery.
Yeah,
I would have been like, oh, come on. That is the... And I would have started cussing and Tourette's like outpour from my mouth would have been terrible. I saw the movie and I was like, no. Batman's
a ninja.
He's a ninja.
Let me be the organizer of this topic and let me single out John because he's looking at me with a weird look in his eye. John, what do you like about the man?
The Batman?
The Batman.
Bats.
His battiness. His battiness, yes. I don't know.
The
classic mind over matter. He's the brain to Superman's bicep.
You know,
what can you argue against?
I've said before on the show why I like him. So let's move past that to something a little bit different that has been getting kicked around on the forum, which is not kind of what about Batman do you like, but which actor do you prefer as Batman?
Ooh. Michael Caine.
If I had to pick one, okay, we're going to open up anyone who has ever portrayed Batman within a major well-known piece of media, okay? So not like at a school play.
I think that when you have to use a glue-on chin implant to make you look tougher, that makes you a bad Batman. Thus, I have to throw Michael Keaton straight out.
I would have to say as my number one choice, Kevin Conroy, the guy that voiced him for the animated series.
And I'm going to have to say that festive little eyebrows make you an automatic winner if you can imagine looking hard-ass in them at all. And so Adam West takes the trophy.
Adam West did go on to Family Guy and continues to
amuse. That's
worth
a certain number of points.
He does continue to amuse me.
That's a certain number of points.
I can't tell you who my favorite is, but for sure my least favorite is George Clooney. But that's only because I can't stand George Clooney.
I had that blocked out of my mind.
The nipple suits also,
like, in true PTSD fashion, I didn't even remember that until you just now told me it. And now the only memory I have is me floating over my body while I'm watching a movie.
The only good thing about that movie...
With huge nipples.
Alicia Silverstone was still cute.
She was really good looking.
That was the only good thing about that movie.
I was like 10 or 11 when that came out, and I was like, oh, women.
Very nice.
Oh, look, there's not Mom.
Yeah.
Of the live-action Batmans, I would have to pick Christian Bale.
I'm going
to
love Christian Bale.
I would say he made a better Batman than Bruce Wayne.
Than Bruce Wayne? Okay.
I agree with that.
He played the part of Batman better than he played the part of Bruce Wayne.
I agree with that part for sure.
I think he was quite versatile in both of the sides of the role.
Oh, I don't think he was bad as Bruce Wayne.
I liked his Bruce Wayne because he showed like a vulnerability and a toughness because he showed a toughness that he was trying to hide and cover up and not doing a good job at it, and I don't think that was bad acting.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I think that Batman, if Batman were quote-unquote real, he is, but Bruce Wayne would have a hard time not being a tough guy, and I think that's kind of the problem in a lot of the series is that Bruce Wayne and Batman are too separate of a character.
Yeah, you know what? I gotta completely agree with that.
I think that you have to have the same guy playing Batman and Bruce Wayne, and they have to be
And we
alike.
Have Batman playing cards on the table.
We do. Something else I love about Batman is not Batman, but his villains. But that could be a whole other banner topic.
Yeah, let's save that one.
All right, so let's get back to the RPG stuff. With continuing our how to run a insert genre game, today we have two genres on the board that are very related. They're not the same, but they're related. And I don't know if we're going to get to them both. It just depends on how much we have to say about the first one. So the first one is Westerns. Now, when Chad first suggested we talk about the Western genre, I was not a believer. Because I was like, you know, I can't think of too many games that are really in a Western setting. And we are separating Western from steampunk. So if you're thinking of a steampunk game, that's not what we're talking about.
That's actually the second topic we may not get to.
The steampunk is the related one we'll either get to later in this episode or next week. So we are not talking... When we say Western, we mean you want to play a role-playing game like an old John Wayne or Clint Eastwood movie. So... when we look at the Western game, at first, I wasn't much of a believer. I couldn't come up with a whole lot of major, super popular games. Yes, I know there's some smaller ones, but I couldn't come up with any super popular games that are set in the Western setting, and I couldn't come up with a lot to say about Western games. Mm-hmm. But Chad started going and made a believer out of me. It's actually quite a bit to say.
So, I don't remember anything I said either.
I know. That's
don't
why
worry, we
that was 20
down.
Minutes ago.
That's why the mighty big board retains all your knowledge. If you were a wizard instead of a homunculus, there'd be a big board that follows you around and remembers so many things that you say.
Did he just call me a homunculus?
Yes, he did. They got progressively more grotesque as the editions of D&D came out. I think in 2E they were just like... little golems, and now in 3 they're made of blood again or something like that.
What's the homunculus in Hellboy called? Oh, never mind. Sorry. Go on.
I never read the comic books, so I don't know.
I can lend you them. I have them all. I'm a huge fan.
I saw the movie. I really liked
the movie.
I thought the clockwork villains looked cool.
Except that's all I came up with. It's disgusting.
Yeah. That's all I came up with from there.
The movie is a huge pile of puke. And, you know, it could be a really good movie, but I'm just that big of a fan of the comics that it was not good for me.
I understand that. I've heard great things about the comics. I've just never read them.
Do you want the first one?
Yeah, why not? I'm still reading Shogun, but I can probably squeeze that in somewhere.
Okay.
All right, anyway, let's start by defining what exactly a Western is, because we've already said we're cutting it off from steampunk. So we are going to define a Western as any game that is set in the middle to maybe a little bit into the later 1800s in the western half of the United States.
All the way from Montana down to Texas, all the way out to California, down into Mexico.
Right, and all points in between and around that. Yeah, we'd probably throw in Mexico in this as well.
Yeah, they definitely run to Mexico.
If you have a game set in the 1850s in England, it's a it could be a great game.
Oh, that'd be fun.
I am a huge fan of late 1800s English literature. I absolutely love it. I mean, stuff like Robert Louis Stevenson and such. But that's a different genre. You're now getting more into like a Gaslight sort of game. You're not necessarily in a Western anymore. So we are defining this specifically as set in North America, western half of the continent, during the middle to late 1800s. One of the first things we came up with is when you sit down to run a Western game, you have to immediately ask yourself one question. And maybe you can go left or right or maybe somewhere in between, but you have to know where you fall, how you would answer this question. Do you want to run a game that leans more towards historical accuracy? Or do you want to run a game that leans more towards the popular image of the West?
Yeah, the sort of John Wayne, you know, the cowboys with the honor and the dueling, and you have a shootout in the middle of the street.
And the outlaws and sheriffs.
That's not even necessarily how all the movies have to go. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is my favorite Western, hands down, and it's not John Wayne. Yeah. It has nothing to do with realism at all, either.
Right. Yeah, but, you know what? I think that's where I'm probably going to weigh in on this is, you know what? I watch Western movies because they're entertaining. I don't read biographies because they're boring.
And, you know, I'm not saying there's a right or wrong answer to this. It's just something that you have to know.
Yeah, that's going to be a preference thing.
Because we did a list up here, some of the things that are different between history and the movies. And some of the things we came up with is the cowboys, who they fought. Historically, cowboys, yeah, there were some of the outlaws versus the sheriff stuff. But typically, the cowboys were herders who were fighting farmers. They were shooting at other agrarians. This is not...
Yeah, generally in the West, it was cowboys versus the sheep herders versus the farmers.
That sounds like Settlers of Catan.
Well, your game could very easily degrade to an episode of Hee Haw, where you, I mean, I'm serious, where you have to avoid the cheesiness because you slept with my daughter, so I'm going to come fight you. That'd probably be very close to reality, but it would not be
interesting. It would turn into like the 1860s trailer park adventure if you got too corny with it. But it can be really good, too, where you have that...
I'm pretty sure Cops is a role-playing game.
The role-playing game's in the 1860s. But you'd have a... You'd
make
have
your
a
save against shirt.
Roll for mullet. Sweat stains.
The back of your hair is 1d20 inches long.
I opened
the front of your hair is 1d6 inches long.
I open the trunk and the GM has to flip over to a treasure table.
But as I was saying though, it would be really interesting where you kind of get that Hatfield and McCoy, you get that sort of inter-county politics of the different forces that are going against each other where there is no law except the law of the gun. And it could be really interesting in that respect. I mean, it depends on the skill of the GM and the quality of the setting and such.
Well, there is potential there because...
Yeah, there is potential.
Like, you know, factions would very easily develop because really, who's going to be the law in the area except bands of people who get together and decide, hey, we need to look out for our community or whatever. But what would happen if two different bands formed up to look out for your community and they disagree on something?
The Civil War?
Yeah. Well, it
was, or Batman. Or
even in a smaller setting, there was when they were establishing Texas, you know, Sam Houston sent all these judges out to try and kind of get some law out on the frontier. And this one judge, God, I can't remember his name, went to this town and he's like, okay, we're going to hold court. And all the people in town were like, we're not going to listen to you. We do what we want. He got a shotgun, kicked open the door of the jail, and he was like, court's in session. And he held every single session of court with a shotgun in his hand.
Well, but these political maneuverings through these groups could create some intrigue for plots beyond the Hee Haw game is more what I was going for.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you're really into the history of it, there is a ton of stuff going on. I've said many times on the show that History Channel is about the only channel I watch, and they've done some stuff on the Old West, and there is a ton of opportunity there for an RPG. It's just you've got to know coming into it that this is going to have a radically different feel and probably radically different plot lines than a movie-style Western, than something like Tombstone or High Noon or whatever.
But you know what? If you want to run a movie-style, more fantastical, not magical, but less historically accurate, oh, boy, there's a ton of resources out there. I mean, there's whole... You go to your local video store, there's a whole section on Westerns. And none of it's historically accurate.
But it's great stuff.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Westerns, I love John Wayne.
I think the easiest pitfall with Westerns would be the hard-ass gaming stuff, because having handlebar mustaches, 9-gauge shotguns on horseback and black suits... I mean, let's face it, that's the first stereotype that probably comes to mind.
And well, that's any game.
That's one of the things that, as we were trying to list possible things that could go wrong in a Western game, one of the biggest things that hit me is I think Westerns as a genre, maybe the only genre out there that is potentially worse than fantasy in terms of just being one gigantic, walking, cheese-covered, mega cliche.
Exactly.
You mean every single time we play a Western, I'm going to play Roland of Gilead?
That we all...
I'm going to play Angel Eyes.
We all walk in with clinking spurs and black suits and handlebar mustaches.
Every bar has a player piano and...
Cat house upstairs.
Angel Eyes doesn't have handlebars.
It's always a dirt town, even though a lot of the Old West stuff happened in places like Montana that are relatively fertile lands.
Or in Kansas and Oklahoma where it's like plains and stuff. Yeah, but, no, it's all Rio Grande and the... or Colorado or Death Valley.
Yeah, tumbleweed rolls across the screen with every scene.
There's always one sheriff for the whole town who only has a revolver.
Well, that's not inaccurate historically, though, depending on where you're at.
Technology is another one we threw up there that could be different between a historically accurate one and a movie one. And I don't want to get too much into that, but if you look at what was going on during the 1800s, there was an enormous amount of technology that was being developed. Things like different firearms, the revolver,
Trains. The telegraph.
The cash register. I mean, there's a ton of the first
steamboat. Oh, yeah, the player piano is very important.
Yes.
Very important.
Well, clearly the linchpin of any good Western or role-playing game setting.
Photography, even things like projectors, were first being developed during this time period. So depending on exactly where you set it, if you're going to be a stickler for accuracy, you really need to look at what was existing then. Just like technology, though, something else we point out is you also got to know the events, because running this through our heads, it seems like in the vast majority of Westerns, the Civil War is completely ignored.
Yeah.
For some.
Oh, it didn't happen.
And the only reason we could come up with for that is, number one, either maybe people are afraid that the Civil War is in there. It would be such a dominating point of the plot and setting, you'd have no room to talk about anything else.
Yeah.
Or secondly, because the Civil War forces you to deal with racial tension. And nobody feels comfortable sitting around a table and RPing a character who frequently uses the N-word.
Yeah. Well, this would definitely not be a game that's appropriate to play in the front of a gaming store.
No.
No, because, I mean, especially if you deal with the racial aspect, I mean, your characters might come into a situation, a black guy is getting beaten and whipped and lynched, and because of where your characters are from and their general attitudes, they have to be perfectly fine with that and do nothing to stop
you're
it.
You're not thinking about the hippie college gamers.
Yeah, and
well, I'm the one cowboy in the 1800s who is all about equal rights.
I am a criminal who ran from the army, who is completely uneducated,
who
kills for a living and cow punches on the side, yet I am enlightened about civil issues. I am completely liberal in my social view.
I am waiting for Plessy versus Ferguson so I can pop a cap.
Well, but there's the black-white issue, but remember also the whole, you know, Indian issue.
Yeah, the Indian
issues. They were probably a bigger problem, so to speak, as far as viewpoint in those days, than color issues.
It depends on the region of the U.S., but yeah.
You know, a quick thought on that before straying to Indians, because this gives us a whole new avenue of talk, but going back to the racial issues between like black and white and the things around the Civil War, we did an episode on handling controversial issues in your games, and I believe one of the things we point out in that episode, or if not that episode, then a previous one, is that it is very easy as a role player to want to take your system of values, which are heavily influenced by the society that we live within, and to imprint those upon other places and times.
Absolutely.
And it is crazy to think that someone in the year 1000 or the year 3000 or even the year 1850 would have the same worldview that you have today. I mean, the things that we take for granted, I think it was C.S. Lewis who said that we've reached a pretty sad point when we cannot separate the intellectual fads of our time from actual fact. But the simple fact of the matter is that nobody truly can. That there are things we accept as fact that are simply the views of our time. And I think that's one of the things that's very hard about the 1850s is who wants to really play, honestly, truly, and thoroughly, someone who really does think like a person of that time. And maybe, you know, people might. There might be people out there that aren't offended by that kind of thing, that are into the role-playing, who could do that and enjoy it for what it is. But a lot of people want to impress their 21st or 20th century values upon the middle of the 19th century.
You could GM around it.
You could.
Yeah.
I mean, you can GM around it, but six people are on the table, only one of them is the GM.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I start to slap my political and social views on the table, and everybody else is stuck with it.
Yeah.
You're stuck with it.
Well, and it also depends on your group. I mean, people do this as a hobby, and they don't want to get into real heavy social, political
statements.
Right,
they don't want the drama.
Yeah, well, and beyond
the
drama,
it's not fun. We're not deconstructing society and thinking, this is how they thought.
I want to go be a cowboy, and I want to,
I say drama because if I introduce a character who has some kind of historically accurate racial prejudice or whatever, I game with a group that's very diverse politically and religiously, and there's going to be people at the table that are comfortable with it, and there's going to be people at the table that are going to be outright horrified by that kind of role play. And so that's where I talk about the drama that it may cause, and this, of course, depends on your group.
Yeah,
and
your mileage may vary.
Yeah, so Indians.
Right.
Indians present another issue.
Yeah, they present land to us that we can take.
They present two different situations, one of which is, like Mike said, that this is another racial issue. And you could also throw on top of Indians in that regard, Irishmen, Chinamen, all kinds of other groups.
Italians.
That's true. That's true.
Well, okay, land issues aside, the stereotypes of Indians can go in two directions. One is the super negative view of Indians where they're all absolute drunkards and they're savages and they're basically they're the bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, the scalping bad guy.
And they don't even have a culture. They're just in the hills.
They're just Indians. And the other one, and actually that's what a lot of people in that time period thought of Indians.
True.
Depending on region and whatnot. But the other view of it is that the super positive view of Indians.
Oh, where, the super romanticized view.
They're the ultimate forest ninjas, and they're completely untrackable.
And they're harmonious with nature and perfect in every regard. And the Kevin Costner view of Indians, and that's really not accurate either. Yeah. I mean, these were humans with a human culture, and like every human with a human culture, they had tons of very, very positive and admirable traits. And they also screwed up in a lot of ways.
They had a lot of very negative traits as well, just like all people in the world. And personally, as someone who runs games and plays games, if I were in a Western game or running a Western game, I would want to see the realistic Indians. Because I want to see a full, well-rounded character. I want to see a human being that has faults and, you know, good things about it.
Well, I think that comes back to relation, though. It is very difficult for me to relate with generic evil.
Right.
It is very difficult for me to relate with these people are so good, you just don't understand their culture.
Yeah. If I were a player in that game, I mean, I'd just be rolling my eyes as the ninja Indian stalked through the woods. And, you know, we're going through the woods, and all of a sudden the Indian, you know, merges from out of the woods and just is behind you and has the hatchet to your neck. It's like, what are you doing on my land?
I'm going to teach you how to raise corn.
Every time you speak to them, they only answer you in riddle, like, wait, where are we going? Well,
the Great Spirit guides your very heart.
Are we
going west? Or,
yeah.
I mean, does the road go west?
There's also something to think about with that. You know, to the white man of the time, they were Indians. But, I mean, that would be a lot like saying that someone was European. There's a big difference between French and Germans. There's a big difference between mound builders and Mayans.
Absolutely. There's a huge difference between, like, the Hopi, the Navajo, and the Blackfoot. Yeah.
Right.
And I guess, once again, this comes back to the kind of game you're trying to run. If you're going far off to the historical extreme, then sit down with some books on Indians or Native Americans and learn something about them. It'll help your game, and you know what? You might learn something useful as a person. If you're going to the other extreme where you're playing F Troop the RPG, this gets real easy.
Go watch some F Troop. You know, I think that the advice we kind of keep coming back here on Westerns is that whether you're running a completely unrealistic game or you're running a historically accurate game, do some background research on it. Even if it's totally cheesy, go rent some John Wayne movies and go watch F Troop or something. Yeah. Because with fantasy stuff, it's just fantasy is so into our culture. And sci-fi is, you know, there's so many TV shows and such. You could say that with Westerns, but they're in our American culture, there have only been the unrealistic view of Westerns in movies and old TV shows, and the popularity of Westerns
has gone downhill.
Has waned. I mean, very few of us have.
Mike got it.
Very few of us, you know, grew up in the 50s when it was popular. That was pre-Sputnik. And
very few of us, none of us grew up in the 50s.
When I say us, I mean like the general gaming demographic. Do some research. It doesn't have to be huge, but, you know.
Watch Lone Ranger.
Ugh. Well, yeah, if you're going for that.
Whoa. Research is research, but torture is still torture.
You know, the Spanish channel's making a new Zorro.
Are they really?
Yeah. I saw it advertised in a movie theater.
Good question. Would you consider Zorro a Western?
Oh, hell yes.
I would,
Very much so.
Yeah.
Because that's all about the land barons at the same time.
And isn't
that's
it interesting?
Very much so.
Isn't it interesting, though, that there are two things radically different about it? One, because it is so steeped in the politics of Mexico, it looks very different outwardly from a one dirt road town tumbleweed Western. And secondly, the imagery of it, instead of the cowboy hat and six shooter, you have the black mask and the
sword. Similarly, you could run a game that never leaves a Pueblo, you know, city.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, Hey, yeah, but when I think Western, I don't think Pueblo City. I think
Revolvers. You want an action-packed game with lots of characters, just completely rip off Magnificent Seven. There's a game that never leaves a little Mexican Pueblo town. You've seen Magnificent
Seven, right? Samurai never left a little Japanese town.
Well, that's right. You know, actually, that's something else that we were talking about, is the sort of...
influence of Kurosawa?
Yeah, the influence of Kurosawa on the Western, the samurai cowboy. The idea that cowboys are honorful and they go into the middle of the street and they have a one-on-one honor duel with their pistols, all very, very samurai and such.
Unless they're Mad Dog Tannen.
If that's your fantasy view of Westerns, that's cool. But that's not really the historically accurate view of Westerns.
So you would say, you thought wrong, dude.
Can we give some plot ideas for Westerns? Because as a game master, who I can honestly say for myself, I have never run a Western game. I was trying to think, the reason I've never run a Western game is partially because I've never seen a system that I thought captured it very well. But secondly, because of the fact that personally, I struggle coming up with plot ideas for it. And I've had some, but I struggle really coming up with a ton of plot ideas. Can we come up with just a couple?
I've given you several macrocosmic sort of little seeds, you know, intrigue between different factions that have the best interest of their town in mind but disagree. Trying to protect your Pueblo city from those wretched damn cowboys who keep coming in trying to wreck the place up. You know, there's different little seeds that I'm planting here throughout our conversation. These are not, you couldn't use any one of these as probably a full-blown game, but you could use this as a start.
And go ahead. I was going to say, as a game master, I have always wanted to play in or run a Western game, be it high realism or high fantasy sort of Western, and I just can't find the people willing to do it. Nobody I know.
I play Roland of Gilead in your game.
Yeah.
I play anything Lee Van Cleef has ever played except for the one where he was a ninja.
Unfortunately, I've brought it up to you guys many times and nobody has shown any interest.
Yeah, I usually shoot playing. This down.
But that's because you bring up Battletech in the same breath.
And that goes back to that everybody agrees on a number two thing.
Yeah.
I think also one thing to look at is that plots that work generally in other genres can be readapted to the setting. That if you think of any plot that you could use in sci-fi or fantasy that is not necessarily directly tied to the setting, you can make it work somehow in this. You know, the dragon that has taken the maiden can suddenly become...
the railroad tycoon who's, you know, trying to marry your fiancé. I mean, yeah, there's lots of things you could...
No, it's clearly ZZ Top in the third Back to the Future.
Yes, it is. They're not villains, though. Those were good guys.
I also think going back to historical research, if you were to read up on the setting, because we've talked about before how the setting is absolutely important because of the way that it enables the game. And in this case, if the setting's real history, it's still setting. And if you look at what was going on in that time period with various towns and various groups of people and where society was headed, I almost think that if you read that carefully, there are plot ideas that would just come out of the text statue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another place that I'd recommend going.
If you want to run a realistic Western game, I recommend reading the biography of Sam Houston. It is very, very good. Basically, the guy went into Texas when it was lawless and turned it into an independent country.
Oh, I also got
lots of plot ideas.
I have to do a shout out to Hansel or Hansel, however you prefer to pronounce it on the forums, because he made a reference to Oofty Goofty. And while we're talking about
the
old
Oofty Goofty,
he was
exactly.
He was a guy from the Old West.
He is a guy that no one can prove actually existed.
And I thought I was the only one who knew about him, and he just made a reference to him on the forums. So I got to give love where love is due.
You know, Chaos just said that he knew.
And then Chaos followed up and said he knew who he was, too.
Yeah, because you mentioned it before.
So now that you've teased us all, who the hell is Oofty?
I don't even want to know.
No. We've talked about this on the show before.
How long have you known Dan? Don't get him started.
He'll have a numbered list up in no time.
Someday when I'm bored and I have a 3-hour drive ahead of me, I will call
Dan. If you're really, really curious, go look up the Wikipedia article on Oofty Goofty.
You know, I stopped taking history class
before I even get home.
Do it.
Yeah. Closing story before we wrap this episode up. Adam and I were having a debate about Clementine oranges. And we couldn't agree on what exactly they were in terms of how they fit into the hierarchy of
fruit. Are they tangerines versus oranges?
Yeah, they were.
And so we were going to go look it up, and he went out to Wikipedia and just changed it to say what he thought was true.
No, you linked Wikipedia to me, and then I went there and I changed it. I was like, perfect source.
All right, well, that's enough for this episode. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot. This show is copyright 2007, fully owned by its host. The games, movies, and other properties mentioned in the show are the property of their respective owners. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to FearTheBoot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at FearTheBoot.com.